If you'll take a look again at Joshua 17 this evening, and I just want to emphasize a couple phrases here in the reading that Pastor Andy already read for us. Joshua 17, verse 14, look at the end of the verse. I tell you what, let's read the whole verse again. And the children of Joseph, that's the tribes of Ephraim and Manasseh, spake unto Joshua, saying, Why hast thou given me but one lot and one portion to inherit, seeing I am a great people, for as much as the Lord hath blessed me hitherto? It's interesting, their attitude as they come to Joshua here. And as we look at this, this attitude is going to be something we need to watch out for in our lives. And as we look at this evening, I want you to keep two locations in the land of Israel in mind. I don't have a map with me, but I do have my arm. And so if this is northern Israel and this is southern Israel, there's two locations we're going to be looking at where this attitude kind of reveals itself. And in the north, there's the valley of Jezreel. And in the south, there's the city of Aphek. Keep those two locations in mind, because not only are we looking at two locations, there's going to be two time periods we're going to be looking at this evening. And there will be the older time period that we just read from, the time of Joshua, even up through the judges, to the very last judge of Israel, Samuel. And then later in Israel's history, during the time of the divided kingdom, there was a northern and southern kingdom. And in the later time period, we're going to look at the time of Ahab. So two locations, two time periods. I'll try to keep it clear where I'm at, and just start waving. If you don't understand where we are, I'll get it, maybe. Speaking of games, one other game our family likes to play is Balderdash. Now, this is not just our immediate family, but when me and my brother and sister and their families all gather at my parents' house at Thanksgiving, it's a tradition to play Balderdash, which is a game where you have a word that nobody is supposed to know what it means, and everybody makes up definitions, and then you vote for the correct definition. And I tell you what, Jamie is very creative. Could she ever win? Would she ever win? Has she ever won Balderdash? No way. But she's very creative in her definitions. And so we have a couple words we're going to look at this evening. One, you probably know the definition of. But they could have been words used in Balderdash. For instance, if I were to ask you what xanthic means, well, you might not know, but you can make up a definition and try to convince the person next to you, this is what xanthic means. Does anybody know what xanthic means? All right, if I told you it meant smelling like flowers, how many would believe me? It means smelling like flowers. Okay, thank you. One vote. All right. I would not win Balderdash either. I'm not getting enough votes to win. It actually means yellowish in color. All right, yellowish in color. Here's some Bible words that could be used in the game, possibly. I hope you know this one. The first is Jehovah Jireh. Hudson Taylor used to hang up in his home a plaque with the Hebrew word Jehovah Jireh. But there was another word on the plaque as well that you might not be as familiar with, and that was Ebenezer. Jehovah Jireh, Ebenezer. So if you do or don't know what those words mean, we're going to define those words, and even one more today that might be a challenge to us. But you're here on Labor Day weekend. You can put some effort into the thinking this evening. And in doing so, we're going to learn something that surprised me. As being a part of these passages here in the Old Testament, we know of the attitude we should have from the New Testament called contentment. We should be content. But with this message I've entitled, How to Benefit from Every Component of Contentment, I found the opposite of contentment here in the Old Testament. And these words are going to help us to overcome an attitude of discontent in our life and help us to work on this attitude of contentment. The first way we're going to see, first component of contentment, We're going to associate with that name for God, Jehovah Jireh. I am thankful that the people of Manasseh and Ephraim realized that it was God who provided their land to them. We see this here again in verse 14. It says that the Lord hath blessed me hitherto. Their total attitude wasn't right in this situation, coming to complain about what they had gotten, but at least they realized that it was God who had blessed them. It was God who had given them this great people. And it was God who provided for them. It's always God who provides for everything we need. Going back to the first instance of the name for God used, Jehovah Jireh, in the Bible, Genesis chapter 22. Verse 13, and Abraham lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, behind him a ram caught in a thicket by his horns. And Abraham went and took the ram and offered him up for a burnt offering in the stead of his son. And Abraham called the name of that place Jehovah Jireh, as it is said to this day, in the mount of the Lord it shall be seen. And as you know, Jehovah Jireh means God will provide. Even more literally, it means God will see. In other words, God will see the need and God will meet the need. That's the first component of contentment, God's provision. Philippians 4:19, but my God shall supply all your need according to his riches in glory by Christ Jesus. All your needs by Christ Jesus, including the provision of salvation. God provides what we need. When Abraham named that place Jehovah Jireh, he said to Isaac, my son, God will provide himself a lamb for a burnt offering. So they went, both of them together. And speaking of Brother Hugh, he's the one that I learned this from. The wording there is very specific. God will provide himself a lamb. Not just to give a lamb in that situation, but God provided himself to be a lamb. Jesus Christ, the lamb who is sacrificed for sinners slain on the cross of Calvary. And so that's why we can join in the future with the great song that will be sung in heaven. They sung a new song saying, thou art worthy to take the book and to open the seals thereof, for thou wast slain and hast redeemed us to God by thy blood. Out of every kindred and tongue and people and nation, worthy is the Lamb that was slain to receive power and riches and wisdom and strength and honor and glory and blessing. God provided himself a Lamb. Are you content with what God provided as the way of salvation? Or are you looking for something more? You know, God provides all that we need. All. For salvation, for life. Psalm 37:25, one of my favorite verses, and I love how relative it is, because it says, I have been young and now I'm old. Very relative statement, all right? We can all say that in some way. I have been young and now I'm old, yet have I not seen the righteous forsaken, nor his seed begging bread. God's provision in our lives. And it's encouraging in the day in which we live. You know, I was reading some reminders from the wisdom of Ecclesiastes. It's not good to look back on previous days and think about back in the day, or those were the days, because God provides now. We can still, in this day, content ourselves with God's provision. Philippians 4:11. Not that I speak in respect of want, for I have learned in whatsoever state I am therewith to be content. I know both how to be abased, and I know how to abound. Everywhere, and in all things, I am instructed, keep that word in mind, both to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and to suffer need. God does provide, but it's not the provision itself that automatically brings about contentment. Isn't that interesting? God provides, but it doesn't automatically make us content. Actually, God provides for many discontent people, doesn't he? God provides for discontent people. So God's provision is only the first component of contentment. It's there. We can't deny it. And it allows us to be content, but it's not every component in itself. Let's look at the very next verse. After Paul says, I've learned to be content, that's verse 11 of Philippians 4. Philippians 4:13, very famous verse. I can do all things through Christ, which strengtheneth me. So this brings us to the next component of contentment. It takes God's power to be content. He does provide, but I've learned and he strengthens me. He enables me to be content. And it brings us to our next balderdash word as well. All right? So the first component of contentment is God's provision. And we realize that Jehovah Jireh means God will provide. Second component of contentment is God's power. And the second balderdash word we're going to think about is the word Ichabod. Ichabod. Here's a good one. Now, you may think of Ichabod Crane, all right? Famous story in American literature. Two love rivals were invited to the Van Tassel Halloween party. While both men dine, Ichabod Crane and his rival, Brom Bones, have been vying for the affections of a young lady. And Brom Bones notices Ichabod Crane spill the salt and then toss some over his shoulder. And he realizes, this is a superstitious gentleman here, and I can take advantage of this. And so Brom Bones dresses up as the headless horseman, we find out, and Ichabod Crane takes the not just the scary trip through the woods because of his superstition, but he ends up running away forever. Why? Because Ichabod Crane trusted superstition. It got him nowhere. He could not rest content. He could not find peace because of his beliefs. And we look here in the Old Testament and we see just as superstitious is the people of Israel when they start, instead of trusting God, trusting a box. And they lose as a result. Now, it's a very special box. It's the Ark of the Covenant. And I don't want to take away from how special it was. It represents God's presence. It was in the Holy of Holies. It had the mercy seat, the very location of the Shekinah glory of God. So I don't want to take away from how special the box was. But when we start trusting a box instead of the Lord's presence there that made the box special, that's a problem. If I can put it this way, when we're not content with God's power in our life, we look elsewhere for answers. And so that important ingredient of contentment is God's power. 2 Peter 1:3, according as his divine power hath given unto us all things that pertain unto life and godliness through the knowledge of him that hath called us to glory and virtue. See, this explains why the tribes of Joseph, who recognized God's provision, God had provided for them as a people, God had blessed them hitherto, they knew God's provision, but they weren't content still. Because in this aftermath of the conquest of Canaan that Joshua led, and it was successful as long as Joshua and those elders who saw God's power at work, who were trusting God's power, as long as Joshua was leading, they had success. They had victory. But in the aftermath, and this is in God's promised provision of a land to his people, the following years are plagued by powerless progress. And it brings us to this name that illustrates Israel's inability to physically inhabit the land and spiritually exhibit contentment. They could not do either one. Let's look back at our passage for the morning. Joshua 17:16. They had an excuse why they could not do what God told them to do, why they were not content with what God gave them. The children of Joseph said, "The hill is not enough for us." There's the attitude. Let's see their excuse. "And all the Canaanites that dwell in the land of the valley have chariots of iron, both they who are of Bethshean and her towns, and they who are of the valley of Jezreel." There's that first location we talked about, the valley of Jezreel in the northern part where Ephraim and Manasseh had their land. But they're saying, this isn't enough. It's not good enough. Now let's hold that thought, okay? Because this is not the first time that the people of God struggle with this idea, with this attitude of discontent. If you want to flip with me back to earlier in the book, we're going to keep our spot here and flip to the book of Judges, early in the book of Judges. We're going to see they have this attitude of discontent for the same reason again. Judges chapter 1, verses 18 and 19. Judges 1, 18 and 19. "Also, Judah took Gaza." We're going to see some cities here that might be familiar as we think about maybe during even the time of David. Gaza and the coast thereof, and Ascalon and the coast thereof, and Ekron and the coast thereof. "And the Lord was with Judah, and he drave out the inhabitants of the mountain." So we're getting a summary of what happened during the time of Joshua's conquest. And then there's a break. And it says, "but could not drive out the inhabitants of the valley because they had chariots of iron." How could they drive out all the people in the first part of the verse, but not in the second part of the verse? Why couldn't they drive out the chariots? The Lord was with them. They had his power. What happened? Well, I believe the explanation for the success of the first half of the verse and the loss of success, the loss of God's power in the second half of the verse, is explained for us in Judges 2. We get more detail here. Judges 2:1, "And an angel of the Lord came up from Gilgal to Bochim and said, 'I made you to go up out of Egypt, and have brought you into the land which I swear unto your fathers. And I said, I will never break my covenant with you, and ye shall make no league with the inhabitants of this land. Ye shall throw down their altars, but ye have not obeyed my voice. Why have ye done this?' Verse 3, 'Wherefore I also said, God speaking, I will not drive them out from before you, but they shall be as thorns in your sides, and their gods shall be a snare unto you.'" Thus we see why Israel could not drive out the chariots. It wasn't that God wasn't with them, but they had lost God's power through disobedience. And it actually got so bad that they lost ground. Areas that they had conquered and that they had gained, even in the flatlands. Even some of those cities we already read that they had already conquered, they lost again. Later in the book, Judges 12, verse 7, "These are the kings of the country which Joshua and the children of Israel smote on this side of Jordan on the west, the king of Aphek." So that's remember we have the valley of Jezreel up north and Aphek in the south. In Joshua's day, they conquered Aphek. That's low country. They did conquer where the chariots were when they had God's power. But then we skip through the book of Judges, all the way through to the book of 1 Samuel. By the time of the last judge in Israel, Aphek was back under Philistine control. They lost it. They had gained it with God's power. They lost God's power, and they lost what they had gained. 1 Samuel 4:1 says that, "And the word of Samuel came to all Israel. Now Israel went out to fight, went out against the Philistines to battle, and pitched beside Ebenezer, and the Philistines pitched in Aphek. In spite of Samuel's influence, they still did not have God's power because they were not being content as they should be." 1 Samuel 4:2, "The Philistines put themselves in array against Israel. When they joined battle, Israel was smitten before the Philistines, and they slew of the army in the field about 4,000 men." 4,000 dead. We kind of lose track of numbers in the Bible and how terrible of a defeat that would have been. We're coming up on the 20th anniversary of 9/11. 4,000 dead for the nation of Israel, much smaller nation than our own, is 1,000 more than we lost in the United States in 9/11 and those attacks on that day. It was devastating. If I can focus our attention on the attitude problem, when we don't have the power of God, we can't be content because we start looking elsewhere for something to trust. And that's what the people of Israel did. Even if it starts with discontentment and you start looking elsewhere for something to trust, you will not have the power of God. It goes both ways. And so in 1 Samuel 4:4, the people who are discontent with God's power, they've lost it, what do they do? So the people sent to Shiloh that they might bring from thence the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord of Hosts, which dwelleth between the cherubims, and the two sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, were there with the Ark of the Covenant of God. The Ark was where God dwelt, but they were not content with God's power. So instead of trusting God's power, they began trusting the Ark itself and lost again. And this time it wasn't the number lost that was important. It was the who and the what were lost. 1 Samuel 4:19, we find out that Hophni and Phinehas died, the priests of the Lord. Now, they weren't doing as they should anyway, living immorally. But also, the Ark of the Covenant was lost. Look in 1 Samuel 4:19. Eli's daughter-in-law, Phinehas' wife, was with child, near to be delivered. And when she heard the tidings that the Ark of God was taken and that her father-in-law and her husband were dead, she bowed herself and travailed, for her pains came upon her. And about the time of her death, the women that stood by her said unto her, "Fear not, for thou hast borne a son." But she answered not, neither did she regard it. And she named the child Ichabod, saying, "The glory is departed from Israel, because the Ark of God was taken, and because her father-in-law and her husband." And she said, "The glory is departed from Israel, for the Ark of God is taken." And that's what Ichabod means. The glory is departed. I'm not sure if her perspective was that perhaps the glory was departed because the Ark was taken, but I would guess that the power was already gone before they lost, because they were trusting in the object. They were trusting the Ark itself. And so the glory was already departed before the battle even took place. And they were already discontented with God's power. And so the lesson for us is, don't trust the box. In looking for victory, do we look to the Lord or somewhere else? Sometimes we get the idea that building a church comes from techniques, and we look to technique. Maybe it's tech, right? Electronics. It's great and terrible sometimes. But it doesn't build a church. It's great. It's useful, but it doesn't build a church. We think of great facilities, instruments, but those don't build the church. Jesus said that he would build the church. Not that we would. See, if we stop trusting God's power, we start looking elsewhere, we might start looking at ourselves. Matthew 16:18, "I say also unto thee," Jesus speaking, "that thou art Peter, and upon this rock," Jesus referring to himself, "I will build my church, and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it." That's God's power. And let us content ourselves in him alone. Yes, his power. He promises provision, Jehovah Jireh. Let's trust his power. Let's not lose it. Let's not let the glory depart from our lives by looking elsewhere other than to God's power. And yes, to God himself. It's so easy for a false perception to perpetuate itself down through generations. And if I can get real practical here, it's important for us not just to trust God ourselves, but to teach how to trust God. It's easy for a father to trust God for God's provision and God's power. But then the children start trusting the provisions instead of who provided those provisions. And the next generation can lose God's power so easily. And we see this progression. We've kind of moved through from Joshua to Judges. And they weren't content with God's provision, even though God did provide. And they lost God's power because they were looking elsewhere for answers. Well, 200 years later, the swaggering Syrians had the same thought that Israel had. The same idea that God doesn't have power in the low country. We can't defeat chariot country. And the Syrians, an invading force, had that same idea. Oh, God doesn't have power there. But God teaches both the Syrians and his people that his power is enough in which to be content. In 1 Kings 20, I find a very interesting situation. During the reign of Ahab, wicked king, God shouldn't protect Ahab. God shouldn't give Ahab victory. That would be our mindset. But God has something else in mind here, and that's to reveal his own power. 1 Kings chapter 20, verse 28. And there came a man of God and spake unto the king of Israel, Ahab, and said, Thus saith the Lord, because the Syrians have said, The Lord is God of the hills, but he is not the God of the valleys. Therefore, God's saying, therefore will I deliver all this great multitude, the Syrians, into thine hand, Ahab, and ye shall know that I am the Lord. And they pitched one over against the other 7 days. And so it was that in the seventh day the battle was joined, and the children of Israel slew of the Syrians 100,000 footmen in one day. Just where did this battle take place? Generations and generations after the people of Israel said, we don't have power in the low country, in the chariot country. The Syrians, 200 years later, God doesn't have power in the low country, in the chariot country. Verse 26, we find the context, the setting of where God shows that he does have power in the low country. It came to pass at the return of the year that Ben-Hadad numbered the Syrians and went up to Aphek to fight against Israel. That same place that people said, we need a box because we can't trust God. And they lost God's power. God shows his power. We can be content in God's power as they should have been. God had told them, you shall drive out the Canaanites. But they weren't content with that. They could have done it. Back in Judges 1:19, we find the third and final component of contentment that we need to be content. And it's been present here this whole time. And actually, I should say he's been present the whole time. Judges 1:19 says, the Lord was with Judah. This brings us to our third and final balderdash word. We've looked at Jehovah Jireh, referring to God's provision. Ichabod, referring to his power, and they lost God's power when the glory departed. And now we're going to look at the word Ebenezer. Ebenezer. Have you ever wondered what the second verse of that song, Come Thou Fount, means? We sing it, right? I always have trouble with it. Here I raise mine Ebenezer, and I try to picture, like, what is going on? Here by thy great help I've come, and I hope by thy good pleasure safely to arrive at home. It's a great song. It's a great verse of the song. Very confusing if you don't know what Ebenezer is referring to. Well, Ebenezer means, hitherto hath the Lord helped us. Amen. God's power is available to us when his presence is with us. And so the third component we're going to look at this evening is God's presence. It's the third component of contentment. God's presence. Joshua 1:5. There shall not any man be able to stand before thee all the days of thy life. As I was with Moses, so I will be with thee. I will not fail thee nor forsake thee. Now the Israelites struggled to remember that. Samuel reminded them. He reminded them, content yourselves in the presence of God himself. He says in 1 Samuel 7, verse 9, and Samuel took a sucking lamb and offered it for a burnt offering holy unto the Lord. And Samuel cried unto the Lord for Israel, and the Lord heard him. And as Samuel was offering up the burnt offering, the Philistines drew near to battle against Israel. But the Lord thundered with a great thunder upon that day, upon the Philistines, and discomfited them. Let's pause. Where are we? We've talked about different battles here. We've talked about the conquering of Joshua. And while they trusted God's provision, they had success. After Joshua passed from the scene, they lost God's power, didn't trust in God's power, started trusting a box instead. But Samuel prays for them. Samuel reminds them here. This is after the Ark of the Covenant is taken, and it's been in Philistine possession for a while. They fight again. Lord thundered with a great thunder on that day upon the Philistines and discomfited them, and they were smitten before Israel. And the men of Israel went out of Mizpah and pursued the Philistines and smote them until they came under Bethkar. Where does this word Ebenezer come from? This situation here, we find that Samuel spoke to Israel when they pitched beside Ebenezer and the Philistines pitched in Aphek. Aphek, where the people thought, we need a box. God reveals that because he's with them, they could win. 1 Samuel 7:12, Samuel took a stone and set it up between Mizpah and Shen and called the name of it Ebenezer, saying, hitherto hath the Lord helped us. It was God's presence that made the difference. When we sing, here I raise my Ebenezer, it's not like a stone you hold in your hand and are lifting it up strangely. All right, it's a monument they set up that they could look to and remember how God had shown himself real. God had shown himself there. It's a reminder that we can content ourselves with his presence. And indeed, it is his presence that enables us to be content. Hebrews 13:15. Let your conversation be without covetousness, and be content with such things as ye have. For, how can we be content? For he hath said, I will never leave thee nor forsake thee. Isn't that amazing? It's God's presence. The only way for that to be true is if it's true in your heart. In other words, if he's in your heart, he's always with us. Ephesians 3:17, that Christ may dwell in your hearts by faith, that ye being rooted and grounded in love may be able to comprehend with all saints what is the breadth and length and depth and height, and to know the love of Christ which passeth knowledge, that ye might be filled with all the fullness of God. Too often, we find ourselves discontent. God will provide. We can trust God's power. We need to realize God's presence is always with us. There are times that we'll make the same mistake that the children of Joseph made. And in the future, there will be those who make the same mistake again. It's interesting, going back to where we started, we read Joshua 17, where the people of Joseph were complaining, we can't beat the chariots of iron. That was in the valley of Jezreel up in the north. So we've talked about Aphek. God proved himself. Even when the people of Israel didn't trust God's power in Aphek, his presence proved himself. He has power in the low country. Now, reminder, up in Jezreel, where the people of God said, we can't beat the chariots of iron, there's going to be somebody who is going to say the exact same thing. God can't win there. God can't win in that valley. Because located in the valley of Jezreel is a little place called Megiddo. And led by that man of sin, the Antichrist, there will be a host of an army gathered against God, thinking, we can beat God here in the Valley of Jezreel. The kings of the earth and of the whole world gathered them to the battle of that day, that great day of God Almighty, and he gathered them together into a place called in the Hebrew tongue Armageddon. It's in the Valley of Jezreel. And you know what? God will once again show his provision and his power and his presence. Revelation 13:10, he that leadeth into captivity shall go into captivity. There's no chance to fight against God. He that killed with the sword must be killed with the sword. Here is the patience and faith of the saints. We can be content. Maybe this evening you feel like the glory has departed from your life. You're feeling a little Ichabod-ish, if I may. Maybe in general, just a general discontented attitude. We need to keep in check in ourselves. We need to watch out for it because it creeps in so stealthily. Maybe we're discontent about a situation. Maybe you feel like the glory has departed from your physical abilities. That happens as we get older. Remember the psalmist, I have been young and now I'm old. And the older we get, the more the glory seems to depart. Proverbs 20:29, the glory of young men is their strength. And then we lose it. And we're not as good at basketball as we used to be and that kind of thing. But the beauty of old men is the gray head, representing the godly wisdom attained. Are we content with that? Sometimes we tend to live in the glory of past accomplishments. We think about the good old days in our lives when, look at all I did. But like I referred to before, Ecclesiastes says, say not thou, what is the cause that the former days were better than these? For thou dost not inquire wisely concerning this. We need to realize that God's provision and power and presence, even today, are still available to us. If it helps, think about those fancy words, right? Jehovah Jireh, Ichabod, Ebenezer. Samuel did his best to remind the people that it's God's presence right now that helps us. And so he gave them, in his speech, what I think kind of can summarize our three components that we've looked at this evening of contentment. I'll have you turn to one last passage right now, 1 Samuel 7:3. Might be there already, I'm not sure. 1 Samuel 7:3. It's not spelled out in the exact same way that I laid it out this evening, but I think it's close enough to make the connection. 1 Samuel 7:3. Samuel spake unto all the house of Israel, saying, if ye do, step one, return unto the Lord with all your hearts, then put away the strange gods and Ashtaroth from among you. And step two, prepare your hearts unto the Lord. And step three, serve him only. He will deliver you out of the hand of the Philistines. I think in those three steps, return to the Lord, get rid of the idols. Step two, prepare your hearts. And step three, serve him only. We can see these three components of contentment. If we follow those three commandments, we will find ourselves resting content once again. One, return unto the Lord and put away. We need to get back to God's presence. Return unto the Lord. Put away the strange gods. Stop looking elsewhere. Stop trusting a box. Stop trusting yourself. It's God's presence that makes a difference. Step two, prepare your hearts. How can we do that? Look at what he's provided. Prepare your hearts with thankfulness, realizing his blessing, preparing our hearts in praise and worship for what he's provided. And steps three, it says, serve him only. How do we serve? In his power. Serve in his power. The nation of Israel had trouble following these steps, and they were missing components of contentment in their life. But we can get them right in our life. As we bow our heads and close our eyes, and Pastor Andy comes ahead, I'll just ask you one question. Is there any of the three components of contentment that God's dealing with you in your heart right now? Maybe it's provision. You need to recognize God's provision. Prepare your heart to see what God has blessed you with in your life. Maybe it's God's power. You haven't been trusting Him. We can't serve Him in our own power. We have to serve Him in His power. And finally, maybe it's His presence. You just need to, as the Bible says, be still and know that I am God. Return unto the Lord with all your heart and put away the strange God. Stop looking elsewhere for contentment.
On behalf of everyone at Beacon Baptist Church, we thank you for joining us today. Our prayer is that your heart and life has been impacted through the biblical truths of this message. If you have questions or would like more information, please contact us through our website at beaconbaptistchurch.org. That's beaconbaptistchurch.org. May the Lord bless you.